Blog Talk Radio.
So it is very rare that we actually get on the air on the day that major news breaks in the world of sports. I can only remember it actually happening twice. We were on the air the day that the Free Report came out, in which for Penn State, which I read like 1,000 pages on my way home. And we're on the air tonight on what is and will probably forever be known as Adam Silver's coming out party for the NBA. Normally, you would say that would be his first NBA draft. However, talk about a crash course in PR. Adam Silver definitely got it this week dealing with Donald Sterling. Welcome to the show, everybody. I understand it's been 2 weeks. I understand that we had a technical foul-up last week, so we were not able to have the show. So just to give a little preview of what we got going on coming up, we're going to talk about Sterling, talk about the NBA playoffs, talk about the NHL playoffs, a little bit about baseball. Then next week is the big two-hour NFL preview, in which I have become very accustomed to getting about 80 to 90% right in the first round. So we'll have a bet going on between Seth and myself, as we normally do. This is the big birthday show, as both of our birthdays are this week. So if you'd like to call in and wish us happy birthday or talk anything about sports, 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. And now I welcome, for the last show of his 37th year on the face of this earth, my colleague, Mr. Seth Campos.
Hi, Mr. Palmer. Good to be back. It's been a while, actually, because even the week before that, I believe you ran it yourself and I was out. I think the last time I did a show was right after Connecticut won the title, which is now 7 weeks.
I guess the last time we ran a show.
I didn't realize last week's show didn't work. Didn't work correctly. So yeah, obviously an interesting time. I was also hosted a show with Randy Zellia when Dwight Howard officially announced he was going to Houston, which was one of the few good moves I thought he had made over the prior 2 years. Although it is looking like they're going to go out in the first round to a pretty spirited Portland team. It's been an interesting day. Anyone forgetting the sports world, anyone who follows anything regarding the news knows what's happened with Donald Sterling. And, you know, Adam Silver managed himself well. There have been questions, is this too harsh? Is this not harsh enough? You know, is this legal? And, you know, you are a legal expert. And I guess the question is this, under the NBA Constitution, $2.5 million is the largest fine allowable. Under the NBA Constitution, while the commissioner cannot remove, permanently force an owner to sell a team, he can ban them into perpetuity. However, people seem to be – now, I have no issue really with the penalty. I do have an issue with the Orwellian way that this came about, where his seemingly gold digger girlfriend taped a supposedly a private conversation and then must have sold it to someone, because I can't imagine she would have just given this away for free. Do you have a problem with how this evidence was brought about?
Okay, so let's get the law out of the way. So law in different states, before I answer your question, I think that's a great question. The law varies in different states. So in New York, you can actually record a conversation. Seth, I can record this conversation without you knowing about it. I can record any conversation without somebody knowing about it because it's a one-party consent conversation law. So as long as one party consents, and obviously the party that is recording would probably consent. So you can't have somebody that is eavesdropping on your conversation consent. But as long as I am talking to you and I am consenting to that recording, then it is legal for me to record that conversation. That varies from state to state. And in California, actually, it is a two-party consent state, which means that both parties needed to consent in order for that conversation to be recorded. And if it was recorded without the knowledge of one of the parties, it was recorded illegally. So I think what you're asking me is, do I have a problem with Donald Sterling's conversation, which was recorded illegally, because I guarantee you Donald Sterling did not know that was recorded, being sold, and due to the selling of that, him losing his team. Am I correct in going through your diagnosis
yes.
of this? Okay. Look, Donald Sterling is a horrid man. I have no problem saying that. The racial things that he said turn my stomach. And I say that in so many different ways. This coming from a minority himself. Now, Donald Sterling, like Seth and myself, is Jewish. And to think that somebody like that, who has gone through so much, I would say, racial profiling and in history being discriminated against going back to World War II, would take that type of tone against anybody, makes me absolutely disgusted. The words that he said were absolutely disgusting. I had to turn them off two or three times to get through the 9 to 15 minute conversation. I was repulsed, as I'm sure most people are. Now, does evidence make its way into courtrooms and into public opinion every day illegally? Sure. WikiLeaks. The whole thing was illegal. But because of WikiLeaks, we have certain protocols which have been changed. What happened in Guantanamo Bay was the atrocities that happened there were released illegally. Do I think she should be held accountable for actions? Absolutely. Do I think it will be hard to prove? No. And there's a $1.5 million suit against that woman from Donald Sterling already for embezzlement. So I'm sure this will come into play. But I don't care where the information comes from, Seth. He should not be owning an NBA team which is run. I mean, at least his team is run. And the majority of the players are African-American after what he said. No question in my mind, the right ruling. I have a problem with seeing how it's going to be carried out.
So you think you have a problem with it, with how it's going to be carried out. Do you think that the commissioner should have the unilateral ability to force the sale of an ownership?
Well, if this happened in baseball, Bud Selig wouldn't have a problem. So Bud Selig has what's called the best interest of baseball clause, best interest of the game clause, which is overarching power. He forced Marge Schott to pretty much sell. He forced George Steinbrenner into suspension. He could basically, I'm sorry, Faye Vincent forced both of those, not Bud Selig, I'm sorry. But the fact of the matter is Bud Selig forced Frank McCourt to sell. That was the person I was looking for. This would not be an issue in baseball. However, in football and in basketball, that concept of the greatest interest of the game is not there. So Rule 13 of the owner's agreement allows for the NBA to step in certain circumstances, which includes financial ruin, kind of like what Charlotte went through back in the day, or Ted Steffen back in the 80s when the Cavaliers had it. Gambling, another reason why the NBA and the owners can step in. But racial epithets is not one of those. So why do I think Adam Silver did this today? Let me ask you, why do you think he did what he did today? Because I have my own theory on this.
I think there are a couple reasons. Number one, I think he legitimately thought it was the right thing to do.
Okay.
Number two, I think there was a very good chance, and this has been confirmed, the teams would have boycotted the games tonight.
I agree with that.
There would have been playoff boycotts, which under no circumstances did does television nor does anybody want. I think number three, that Silver, Silver has been in the background for 30 years, for 25 years behind Stern. And I think he wanted to, I don't want to say make a name for himself, but I think this was his first opportunity to prove he was not a lackey of the owners, to prove that he was his own man and kind of make a real strong showing. And he did that. Those are the reasons that come to mind off the top of my head.
I definitely think that we would not have had basketball tonight. No doubt. I think, or we might have had basketball for three quarters and then not a fourth. Like, there would have been some form of massive protest if something did not come down today, which is kind of why you understood that something was going to happen today. Because I don't think there could have been a game played in L.A. in Clipperville tonight without some ruling today by Adam Silver. I agree with you. I think he put a stamp on his legacy. And it's funny because David Stern, I don't remember one thing that you could probably say David Stern's legacy hinged on. Like, he did a lot of good, no question about it. But I don't think you can name, like, one distinct thing. Maybe the Olympics, maybe.
The Dream Team.
This is that.
International expansion.
Right, but I'm saying one day, one event, that he stood up and said, this is my day.
Wow.
Adam Silver could have had his day 3 months into his tenure, and he may be the commissioner for 30 years. And today could have been that day.
10-second pause. Robbie Cano is playing his first game for Seattle in Yankee Stadium. And he's getting booed heavily. First at bat.
Are you surprised?
I don't think there's enough people there to make a difference. Anyway, back to the more important issue at hand. Yeah, it's very rare that someone has an opportunity to really, I don't want to say to initiate a legacy. I think it's probably the better way to put it. There's questions by the thousands of where this will go. My assumption is now, based upon what they said, ownership needs to be 75% ownership. 75% of ownership needs to concur with the necessity of Sterling to sell the team. My guess is there won't be a problem there, especially if...
I cannot imagine the recourse, the public backlash, if somehow this didn't pass. Do you agree?
Well, I think there's two things to be said here. First of all, I think Kevin Johnson, who has led the whole charge in this, says it's 29-0. I think when the public gets a hold of the vote, it will be 29-0. Do I think once you're in the – if we were sitting in the room, it would not be 29-0. I think there will be three or four owners that will say, you know what, this is not right, because as Mark Cuban has said, this will create a slippery slope. But at the end of the day, he'll get his 29-0 as a show of solidarity. I think he'll definitely get his 29-0. Now, here's the thing, though. Adam Silver learned very early from David Stern. You don't come out and say something unless you already know it's in the back. He's a very good attorney. the same way David Stern is. The one thing you learn in law school when you bring somebody up on the witness stand is you don't ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. Well, Adam Silver came out today and said, I will ask the committee, or I will ask the ownership committee, to vote Donald Sterling out. He's already taken that poll. He already has the votes. He doesn't say that without having the votes. Because if he did, he'd look like a schmo. He's got the votes. No question in my mind already. But here's an interesting question, and I love going back and revisiting people's legacies.
Well, actually, before we start that, we have a caller.
Oh, excellent.
Hey, you're on with Seth and Sean.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's your boy Elwood in Indianapolis. Hey, what I'm calling about is, nobody's bringing this up is, but the NBA was really smart to come down fast and hard on this guy because it would have trickled down on them really quick. You know, people were getting ready to boycott the owner, then they were going to boycott the team, and I guarantee you that if the NFL didn't come down on this guy like crazy, they would have boycotted basketball altogether, every team across the board. So this is kind of a survival thing for them coming out loud. They're going to make him sell the team, and they're going to make him get out because this will fall back on them. It's like if Walmart had an employee yell a racial comment, they have to do something or people would just boycott every Walmart in the country. And basketball was smart to do this. I think they did the right thing, ban him for life, force him to get rid of the team, and fine him a couple million. I mean, brilliant. But, man, they came close to losing it all, you know, because people won't tolerate this in our society, you know. So, I don't know. Do you guys think that, too, or do you think that's kind of why this was overkill? I mean, the man said a few statements in a free country. Now, you know, $250 million, you're banned for life, and I'll choose your team. You know, I mean, I realize a lot of it's just the atmosphere of where we live, but do you think that's partly why he got such overkill?
Well, we definitely appreciate your call, and we'll be happy to answer it. Please call again. We love having callers on, 760-283-0846. Seth, do you want to take that first?
No, you can go first, and I'll respond afterwards.
Okay, well, I definitely think you're right. I think that they had to do something. But here's the strange part about this. You may see a lot more of this before you see a lot less. Adam Silver may have thought that he's nipping this in the bud. I think this is only the start. If you're going to force Donald Sterling to sell the team, which is what Adam Silver is trying to do, many people don't know what Donald Sterling did for a living before he went into residential owned residential buildings, which he acted as a slumlord, but he was a litigator. You're going to see this in court. And when you see this in court, when you see this in court, Donald Silver's been an owner of an NBA team for 30 years. You don't think there's been correspondence back and forth between other owners? If this goes to court, you're going to see discovery, and you're going to see a lot of black eyes going all over the place.
Actually, I don't think this goes in front of a court. My understanding is this would go to arbitration. If there were, now you're the lawyer, so this, I mean, even saying it doesn't really make sense that it would go to arbitration. But
you're right. There is a reason it would go to arbitration, and that's because in the owner's agreement, there is a concept that says that all disagreements between the ownership and the commissioner must go to court, must go to arbitration. You're absolutely right. However, that doesn't touch upon, remember, that's all disagreements within the agreement. There is nothing in the agreement that requires or allows the commissioner to force a sale. So what Donald Sterling can say is not only is it not in the agreement, but you're breaching the agreement. The agreement doesn't apply. So if the agreement doesn't apply, then I can go to court.
Let me ask you, we got a problem. Point though, what is his actual recourse? Because, I mean, he can't keep the team simply because no one will play for him now. Every sponsor has pulled. My guess is if he was still in ownership, that half of the season tickets sold would not be renewed. The team would probably not be televised as little as possible from both a national perspective. And I don't remember off the top of my head if the national spread is split 32 ways even or not, but we can discuss that another time. This has single-handedly destroyed him. Now, I'm not saying it's not warranted, but I don't see how even if he wanted to keep the team, he could at this point.
Okay, so let's discuss that, okay? So can you keep a team? Can you own a team but not have any part of a team, any hand in the team? Absolutely. That's been done many times before, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go back to George Steinbrenner being held by Joe Malloy. We can look at, I think his name was John Allen, who ran the team instead of Mark Schott. Right? Owners have been suspended before. And have been suspended for years. I mean, not just like 6 months, years.
Yes. Agreed.
So if that happens, let's say it happens, and it's put in receivership or put in trust, and he has no hand in the game whatsoever, why can he not own the team?
No, well, you're missing my point.
No,
sponsors
I think your point. I think that at that point, you're saying he's a silent partner that has no role in the team.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if he keeps the team, or even if he's a silent partner, per your point, who's going to play for him? They'll never get a free agent again. They're never going to get a market. They've lost all but one marketing deal. More than half of the season tickets wouldn't be renewed while his name had anything to do with the Clippers. Now, I understand that my guess is that the TV deals, the national TV deals, are split evenly between the 32 teams. But even a local TV deal, there's always an out clause for some kind of immoral behavior. So that could be outed because the idea is, this would single with his name associated in any capacity, this franchise is annihilated.
Okay.
Let me finish. But I think you get where I'm going with this. The question to me is, what's the point? I mean, even if he wanted to keep the team at this point, what would be the point?
Okay. Well, here's where the point is, okay? When were the Clippers good before the last 3 years?
Never.
Right?
They had a year or two in the early 90s.
Okay, but for all intents and purposes, I think they missed the playoffs 17 out of the last 19 years. Right? So they were never good. Okay? They gave away their money to Benoit Benjamin, to an old Dominique Wilkins, to Danny Ferry at one point. I mean, I can go on and up. Michael Cage. They go on and on with the guys.
Hey, Michael Cage led the league in rebounding 1 year.
I know, but I don't think it was for the Clippers.
Not sure.
I'm not sure, but I don't think it was.
Okay, anyway, I can continue.
The fact of the matter is they've never been a good team before the last 2 years. Donald Sterling has made a profit every single one of the years that he has owned the team to the point of 12%. 12%.
But during this period of time, they also still had sponsors. Now they may not have been paid. It may not be Mercedes or something at the high level, but there were still sponsors. There was not a great local TV contract, but there was still a pretty sizable local TV contract. I don't know if there's any of this
at this point. There's season ticket holders who have been there 5, 10, 20 years. If you're a black season holder, season ticket holder, do you want to give money to this asshole? Pardon my language.
This is why we're on Blog Talk Radio and not
exactly.
NBC Radio.
Hey, it's a first swear.
But Seth, the fact is, I understand what you're saying, okay? And I understand that they would have to endure probably 2 or 3 years of very limited exposure, to say the least, okay? First of all, the players are under contract. So they either play for Sterling or they don't play at all. When you're earning $10 million a year, you kind of play. Let's understand, I'm fully in agreement that this was a horrendous, what he said was horrific. What he said was atrocious. What he said is unconscionable in today's society. In any society, not today's. To me, this should be for any society. But these players have contracts, so they're either going to play for them or they're not going to play at all. So, are you going to tell me that the NBA is not going to promote Chris Paul because Donald Sterling owns the team? Blake Griffin is just going to be in the background doing nothing because Donald Sterling owns the team? Owns the team. Not runs the team anymore. Owns the team. I don't see that happening.
I'm not so sure.
He's not Mark Cuban. He's not 50 years old. He's 81. He's not going to be around forever. I think you have a problem forcing this man to sell his club. I think you're going to have a big problem with it. I think Donald Sterling is going to tie this up in court forever. And there's another reason behind that. It's called something you're very, very, very familiar with. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm on bated breath. What are you talking about?
Capital gains taxes.
Ah.
So Donald Sterling bought the team for $12 million. Donald Sterling will likely sell the team for $750 million. That means he has capital gains of about $720 million in taxes. How much of that does he have to pay?
Well, now, to be fair, you can take up to $3,000 losses. So, assuming he doesn't have $725 million of losses, which he, if he would, if he does, he's probably the world's worst businessman, it's a nice... nine-figure bill. However,
okay. So let's say
and he's also in this. He would owe quite a bit, probably on the Fed and the state. So let's say he sells it for $700 million, and he pays taxes of $300 million. He walks away with $400 million. The world is not crying for him.
Wait, go with me on this, okay? Donald Sterling dies tomorrow. His wife, he's still married, his wife and his kids own the team, right? They get in a will, and they simultaneously sell it. So they don't even, it's not even like 2 days. They sell it tomorrow, okay? For $700 million. And it's valued at $700 million. How much should capital gains taxes do they pay?
It's not capital gains. It's estate taxes.
Okay. No,
it's
but
passed,
I'm saying,
again,
they
if
pay
it's passed,
estate taxes because it's passed down, but they would pay zero capital gains taxes.
Yes. Well,
because
unless
they get it valued at $700 and they sell it at $700.
Well, okay. Look at you.
Right?
Since, first of all, since when do you do estate law? But it actually is even simpler than that.
I've learned a lot about this today.
If you pass it from husband to wife, there is no estate. The estate issue is minimized, assuming it's in some kind of trust, which I don't know how
okay.
it's
sold. So let's say it's passed from husband to wife and sold immediately. They pay zero. Or say they pay $10 million in estate taxes, right? So you're at the difference.
I see what you're saying, but here's the problem. Does Donald Sterling strike, first of all, considering the warm relationship he seems to have with his wife, does Donald Sterling strike you as a guy who's gonna try and better himself? Considering his feelings toward his rancor towards his wife, I don't quite see him doing it that way.
No,
and if you do pass
I see him trying to find a way not to sell the team. And this is a $300 million reason to tell the NBA to flip him the bird and say, no, you're not costing me $300 million.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting few weeks. And now we've spent half of our show talking about this. Do we want to discuss this more, or are we kind of – how much more do you really want to talk about?
I mean, at the end of the day, if you have some comments, 760-283-0846. I mean, I think that's the best way to deal with this right now. We're going to put this to bed until next week, where we'll spend the first half hour of our show talking about the normal sports around the world, and then the next 90 minutes will be our draft preview. Next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the NFL dominates the stage. So we'll be happy to talk all about that and predict our first-round picks, including how the Jets messed this one up again. So moving on to something better, brighter, and something I've worked on the last couple of days. Seth and I talked about this last week. We're going to take a road trip this week, this summer. And we'd like you to decide where we're going. Because I've done all the research. Seth has provided me with excellent website analysis, and which basically means you sent me one web link, and I've done more, which is fine because I enjoy doing this. So we have two, and we're going to discuss this on the show because he's pulled up the spreadsheet that I have sent, and basically the cost is the same for both of these trips. So trip A, we take the lovely Sean Palmer-mobile, which is actually a lovely car, and drive it from New York to Cleveland, Cleveland to Detroit, Detroit to Milwaukee, Milwaukee to Cincinnati, Milwaukee to Chicago, Chicago to Cincinnati, Cincinnati to Pittsburgh, and then Pittsburgh to home, all in 9 days. Trip number two. We ditch the Sean-mobile. We don't even use it. We take some airline, not the one that crashed in the Indian Ocean. We try and avoid those. And we fly out to Seattle and start at Safeco. And instead of renting a car, yes, we're doing it the way that they did it in the Old West. We're getting on a locomotive. And we're taking not 5 hour, not 10 hour, not 15 hour, but a 20-hour train ride from Seattle through Portland all the way down to San Francisco, where we will spend three luxurious days in the home of my aunt, Rachel Melendez, who has been gracious enough to open her home to us, see games in San Francisco and Oakland, then traverse on Amtrak again, down to L.A., where we will go to Chavez Ravine and the Big A. And I'm, the Big A was the Anaheim Coliseum, but we'll say it's the Big A. And then we will take Amtrak again down to San Diego, where we will spend between 3 and 4 days on the beach in San Diego and go to Petco Park for at least one game. Now, the cost of these two trips is roughly the same. It's within $100, believe it or not. The second trip does take additional time. But if you're going to take additional time, wouldn't you want to spend it in San Diego? I would. Just saying. So those are two trips, A and B. So, Seth, I have now laid out our plans. I have given it to the people to discuss. I give it to you.
Well, they do look like fun. And either one will be a blast, which we do probably the first week in August. Now, the questions I have are, well, how much is a flight to Seattle and a flight back from San Diego? We're not particularly inclusive in this.
No, they are. What do you think the travel is? No. They were definitely included.
$175? That's the travel?
That's right. That's the travel.
Now, I have been to games in Seattle, although that was 20 years ago, so that barely counts. San Francisco.
That doesn't even count.
As I said, that barely counts. I've been to games in San Francisco, Chavez Ravine. It's still Chavez Ravine they play at, right?
It is.
And Petco. I have not been to any games in the second trip. Does California sound better? Damn right it does. Do we have places to stay? Probably in every place except for Seattle. I have good friends in San Diego. I have a few friends in L.A. I'm sure we can crash.
Oh! Wait a second. You got friends in L.A.? If you got friends in L.A., it's actually less expensive to go on the West Coast.
Well, I don't know if we can stay with them.
Oh, well, we'll figure that part out. Okay, continue on.
Yeah, I got like 7 or 8. I'm immensely popular. Haven't you seen my Facebook?
Well, we will test that this week because in the second annual birthday bash, Seth and I tend to have a battle to see who gets more happy birthdays. And this year, Seth has obviously the advantage of being on a weekday. So we will see who has the better of the birthday bashes. Continue on.
Well, first of all, it's a higher percentage because we know that you have more friends than I do.
It is a higher percentage. I understand.
Because you're just immensely popular, and I just struggle to keep up. But that being said, because nobody likes me, womp womp.
We'll see how many people show up at the birthday party.
I'm surprised you haven't actually opened that up on the radio show.
Nah, you've warned me before. So I've not opened it up.
That's fine. But either way, it'll be a blast. The only reticence I have for the San Diego trip, to be honest, is I've never really done a cross-country trip, and not that this is cross-country, but, you know, it is kind of in a lot of an area. You know, I've never been to Cleveland, never been to Detroit, never been to Milwaukee or Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. And I've been to every place in the West Coast. But, you know, there are good and bad to both. And
please call us in and tell us what there is to want to go to in Cleveland, Ohio. Please.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. How far is Canton, Ohio?
Canton, Ohio is 20 miles away, but yet we have not planned to spend a day in Cleveland. So I need some help with this if you're looking to spend time there.
I really haven't given it.
The East Coast trip that was planned, that's in 8 days, is a day by day with 1 day spent in Chicago. That's it. An extra day is spent in Chicago. The rest of them are on the road days. So one must help me out with this, and we will discuss that further off the air. Well, understood.
Oh. So anyway, for anyone who has thoughts on this, please don't hesitate to call in. And, of course, we'll be doing at least one radio show from the road, because, and maybe we'll do it from the park, which would be a pretty cool way to do it.
So random people can walk up to us and say, who are the two weirdos talking into their phones 3 feet away from each other?
That would be absolutely awesome. Actually, we might actually use the same phone. See, that would be smart because that would be like a microphone.
That
but
would be
anyway.
True. We're not very smart.
No, we don't have like 9 degrees or something like that. But anyway. So that's the second thing I want to talk about. Third thing I want to talk about is, let me ask you something. When you were growing up, and we grew up around the same time, who are the guys that you can say were the voices of your youth? So pick one for every sport, and who are the voices of your youth?
Baseball was Vin Scully, still is. Maybe Phil Rizzuto, just because we were New Yorkers, and
mm-hmm.
Rizzuto was more prevalent in New York than Vin Scully. Football, unquestionably to me, was Pat Summerall. Because him and John Madden did all the NFC East games at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock on CBS at that point. For basketball, it was Marv Albert. Probably, you know, although he's, I don't want to say antiquated is the right word, but he's been doing this for so long, but he's still a legend in the sport. In hockey.
Yes.
Hockey it's always going to be, even though he's a little bit younger than the people I mentioned. Well, considering Pat Summerall is dead, he's obviously still younger because the voice is Doc Emrick. I don't know who else it really could be.
Well, I see where you're going. And for me, in baseball, it was always Ed Coleman for the Mets and Howie Rose, Ralph Kiner along with those. In hockey, it was Jake McDonald with the Islanders and Eddie Westphal. That was
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the sports that – I mean, when I think of the great voices of
sport – I didn't say the great voices. I said the voices to you.
Okay. That doesn't really change very
much. Boy, who did you grow up with? So who was you just said Doc Emrick for the Devils, right?
Yeah, because I was not a hockey guy. So Emrick was when I started following hockey, and as most of you know, I'm still not the world's biggest hockey fan, though I enjoy the playoffs. Emrick was the one voice that I knew.
Right, and you said Rizzuto for the Yankees, right? Even though you like Scully. You still remember Rizzuto. So for me,
sure.
I didn't watch a lot of national stuff because my teams were local, so I didn't have to. But I have to tell you, most of my watching and listening, I didn't have cable growing up. I was a big radio guy. Everything I listened to was on the radio. So I have Jiggs McDonald, who was on the radio for the Islanders, and I have Ed Coleman, who was on the radio, along with Ralph Kiner for the Mets, and for the Jets, it was Dave Jennings. He was my guy. He was the color guy, but he was my guy. But for basketball, I get you with Marv Albert, and I also put Walt Frazier in there for me. It was Clyde was always on 660 WNBC at the time. But the guy that taught me more basketball, and we were talking about Pat Summerall passing away, was Dr. Jack Ramsey. And unfortunately, Dr. Jack passed away this week. And to me, he was the quintessential guy, and even when he was on TNT later in life and for the Heat, it wasn't like I was listening to a guy rather than I was just waiting for him to teach me something new and waiting for him to tell me something I didn't realize in watching the game, if I was watching, and he was always on Westwood One for the basketball games, for the finals back when. And for me, it was always listening to him. And he passed away yesterday, and if you haven't read Craig Ramsey, I think is his son's name,
mm-hmm.
He wrote a great article on ESPN, he's a senior editor on ESPN.com. He actually was his father's boss later in life, which seems contrarian a little bit. But read his article about his father, and you couldn't ask for a better son if that's the way he thought about his father. But Dr. Jack was just I mean, I still hear him talking about pick and rolls and why this guy, and even the Heat last year in the playoffs, used a play by Jack to Jack. And I heard this story yesterday. And so when Bob Hill was the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, Bob Hill, who later went on to coach Fordham, he was the Knicks coach for a while, Dr. Jack was sitting on the side, and he went to Bob Hill and says, "Why don't you play Will Perdue and David Robinson together?" And Bob Hill goes, "That won't work." He goes, "Why not?" He goes, "They're 2 7-footers, and they can't play together." He's like, "Why don't you try it? I mean, what's the worst thing that happens?" So in the third quarter, Bob Hill puts Will Perdue and David Robinson together in the lineup, and they reel off 12 straight points, and they win the game by 10. The insight that man had was, and the fact that he taught that to all of his listeners, was outstanding. He was one of the guys that will definitely be missed. In the days of now where you have 35,000 announcers, he was one of those guys that you always knew and always looked forward to listening to.
Yeah, the only people I kind of put in his realm as an analyst with that kind of knowledge and detail are Hubie Brown and Doug Collins are the two that come to mind. Jack Ramsey's really talked about – there was a great book, one of the best sports books ever written. It was a book called The Breaks of the Game, which is one of the two best NBA books I've ever read, or two or three best basketball books I've ever read. And it's about the team he coached in Portland, which won the title in 77, 78, and then the year after, where he coached Bill Walton to what would have been not only a Hall of Fame career, which he had anyway, but to a truly, truly top of the pantheon, top 10 to 15 player of all time, if he had been able to keep healthy. Jack Ramsey has done everything. He coached a team. He coached St. Joe's, I believe, to the Final Four in the early 60s. He was a GM, helped Will Chamberlain win his first championship, coached a champion, was an analyst for 20 years, beloved by all basketball fans for both his knowledge and his way of coming across without seeming condescending, which a lot of times when you hear announcers, that especially younger ones, tend to happen. One of the preeminent basketball announcers of all time, one of the preeminent basketball men of all time, he'll certainly be missed.
Yeah, I mean, I said this on Twitter yesterday for those that do follow me. I said when I was growing up, there, in my mid-teens to late teens, there was only one Dr. J, and it had nothing to do with Julius Erving. It was Dr. Jack. So, yesterday was a sullen day, absolutely a southern sullen day. So he will be missed. I'll tell you the people that should miss him most, and that's the kids growing up today that they don't get to listen to him, because he, like you said, Hubie Brown is a perfect example. You're absolutely spot on. I think Collins is he needs a little bit more to his repertoire, but Hubie Brown is like Jack Ramsey minus 10 years. So a little bit of a mess. So anyway, moving on to, should we talk a little bit actually about the NBA and that the playoffs are going on amidst all this sadness, I guess, in total. So the Zards, tonight go up 3-1 against the Chicago Bulls in what may be the biggest upset of the NBA playoffs so far.
You think that's the biggest upset of the NBA playoffs? An eight up a 1-3-2, Dallas completely outplaying San Antonio, Memphis tied, Houston down 3-1, and you think the Bulls, who have less offense than just about any team in the NBA, being down 3-1 is that big of an upset?
You've made your point. Do I think that first of all, San Antonio and Dallas are 2-2. They're not 3-1.
Well, that's what I said. But I said that Dallas has outplayed them for most of the series.
Okay. I mean, we've talked about this all year. I don't think San Antonio is all that good. I mean, I don't think they're deserving of the one seed. I think they play great regular season ball. Ginobili is playing fantastic in the playoffs, but they're struggling. I don't see that. The Hawks or the Pacers, on the other hand, there you go, spot on. Shelvin Mack with 20 last night. Korver with 9 rebounds. I don't even know Kyle Korver can get 9 rebounds. I mean,
he can
easily
over a season.
He gets like 9 three-pointers a game, but 9 rebounds? Shelvin Mack? Shelvin Mack leading the way with 5 assists. You know the Pacers are in trouble when David West leads your team with 7 assists. So they lost by 10 last night. Tonight's games are, like I said, the Zards go for the win. The Clippers and Warriors, my finals team. The Warriors and the Thunder against Memphis. So Thunder against Memphis, interesting games with Durant averaging 32, Ibaka with 8, and Westbrook with 7 assists. But you're right, they're getting outplayed by the Grizzlies.
Yeah, the West is so tough right now. It is looking more and more like Miami. Although I'll tell you, I was very impressed with how Charlotte played the last few games against Miami. But Miami does look more and more like this is going to be a walkthrough in the East. Indiana looks absolutely – I mean, have you ever seen a team fall apart like this from one half of a season to another? I mean, they look absolutely discombobulated. The Wizards look good, but they're too young. The Nets and Raptors are in a fight, but nobody really sees the Nets or the Raptors beating the Heat. And, you know, whatever team gets out of the West, and this is going to be an absolute free-for-all over the next 4 or 5 weeks, more and more, as much as I hate to say it, I think you see the Heat as almost the overwhelming favorite going forward right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat, it'll take a lot for somebody to beat the Heat at this point.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Please do.
Kind of going back to what happened with the Clippers. Mark Jackson made a comment where he was saying, well, if he was in that position, he wouldn't be backing the Clippers right now, and they should be playing this game in an empty stadium and this and that and the other thing. Now, I found this a little bit disconcerting, considering this is a guy who is apparently coaching for his job and is 2-2 in a series. Did you find this to be on me? Forgetting everything that kind of came along with it, did you find this to almost be a little bit of gamesmanship on his part?
Yeah, it's completely self-serving. Now, do I think that he meant it? Yes. I think he did mean it. I did think he would have liked that to have happened. I think that he thinks that Donald Sterling deserves it. But I think he was wrong to even speak of it. I don't think it was purposeful gamesmanship. I don't think he meant stay home so we'll be better. But obviously, I can't get into Mark Jackson's head, but I don't think he meant it in that realm. I think he actually believed in what he said. I think he was wrong to even speak to it. I mean, he was speaking to what Doc Rivers should do. Mark Jackson is a seasoned veteran, not of coaching, but at least of the media. I mean, he was on ABC's with Marv Albert and Steve Kerr last year. Is that it? 2 years ago? He was on the lead announcing. Or Mike Breen. He was on with Mike Breen. And the fact is, you can't be saying that. You just can't. I mean, you're right. Self-serving, absolutely. Wrong place, wrong time, wrong everything. But I still think they're going to make the finals, especially if they get Bogut back. I mean, I don't think the Clippers are a player of winning the series after what's happened. Do you?
I don't. I think the Warriors win the series.
Okay. So we got about 5 minutes left. Would you like to start this one off?
In
in a death that kind of shook most of the rest of the sporting world, just not the U.S., because the U.S. doesn't really, well, care about soccer. The coach of Barcelona last year, actually, a guy named Tito Villanova, died at age 45. Coached 1 year, won the championship, and was fired. And you think coaching in another world, in the U.S., is tough. So, and his best friend is actually, he followed his best friend, who was a guy named Pep Guardiola, who is probably considered the premier coach in the world at this point, at Real, resigned, or at Barca, excuse me. Guardiola takes a year off. This guy comes in, wins, then he dies, and they're best of friends. Yeah, he died 2 days ago, and then Guardiola has to coach today in the Champions League semifinals with Bayern Munich and gets annihilated by Barca's rival, Real Madrid. And just pretty brutal week for Guardiola, terrible week for Spanish soccer, Spanish football. So just kind of wanted to put that out there. We'll talk a little bit more playoffs, obviously NBA, NHL, next week. And happy birthday to my younger esteemed colleague, my mama.
Happy birthday to my older esteemed colleague. Not necessarily wiser. Well, a little bit wiser. I mean, 2 days, 48 hours wiser. But I wanted to talk to you about this. We got 4 more minutes left, and I wanted to bring this up. Because this reminds me of Shades of Billy Martin. Manchester United. Yes, I actually was listening to this last night. Fired their coach. I think they played 20 or 30 games. Like, obviously, I didn't pay that close attention to it, but I understood the serious ramifications of it. What the heck? He doesn't even get a full season? I mean, I understand that Billy Martin didn't get a full season, but then Billy Martin was back in, like, April of the next year. So I can't imagine David Moyes, M-O-Y-E-S.
David Moyes. Yep.
It is. It's going to be back with Manchester United next term or next quarter
He will not be.
He will not be on the pitch again. What is either A, Manchester United's problem, because they obviously saw something in this guy before they hired him. Will David Moyes recover and coach another team? And I'm asking your opinion on all this. And
okay.
Are they crazy in England?
Okay, let's take one step at a time. In as Sean knows, I'm a pretty big English Barclays Premier League fan. So Moyes was kind of a wild card shot when they brought him in. Although I was a big fan, he was very successful at a middle tier team at Everton. And the thought was that he would fulfill Alex Ferguson, probably the greatest soccer coach of all time's footsteps. Instead, the team, in a lot of ways, rebelled against him. Players are leaving after the season. And to make things worse, the English Premier League, or BPL, has an average turnover of about 30% annually on coaches. So for every 20 teams, about 5 or 6 coaches quit or get fired every year. So I wasn't surprised. He will coach again and will be successful. He will never get a team at the Man U, Arsenal, Liverpool level, but he will get another mid-tier team and will be successful doing so.
Well, why would he not get another job at that type of level? I mean, that type of level
is a top five job? It's probably the top five soccer job in the world.
Okay,
and
but he obviously was picked up the first time. I mean, you got guys like Tony La Russa that go from one top five job to another top five job. And
He was not at a top five job before this.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is he obviously succeeded at what we would call, let's say, basketball, the mid-major level, right?
Yes.
So he went up to the – so he's Billy Gillespie. He went to Kentucky and failed.
As good as any. For Sean Palmer, we have 10 seconds left. So,
all right.
For
happy
Sean,
birthday, buddy. We'll see you next
Sean
week.
For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens. Have a good night and 2-hour special next week. Bye.